off the subject, but now we've talked enough about the problem. Let's talk about the cure. Okay? So the question that we're trying to answer is that how to keep the mind tranquil and how to keep peace in the mind and stability, so when you move into different aspects of life, situations which aren't, we might say that we're forced into because of social relationship, marriage, friends, we do these things and we shut ourselves up, we close ourselves up, we understand this is all our own makeup and this is all what God is pushing us into as a test. So how to avoid the old remedy of just shutting it down like a tortoise and just getting through it and hope to God that it doesn't happen again. Okay. Sri Ramana Maharshi, the Buddha, Jesus even said it, and it's in the Bhagavad Gita, but I'll talk specifically because from memory I've got the exact quotes that Sri Ramana Maharshi said and also the Buddha said. When they're talking about how to attain tranquility, how to attain illumination, okay? Sri Ramana Maharshi said that first is atma-vichara, which is reflection on the nature of the self, and the higher teaching or the higher practice is called jnana-vichara, reflection on the nature of knowledge itself, on God itself. That is the end goal. You don't deal with that first. You deal with the atma-vichara. You try to understand, watch the mind, and you understand who you are. That means, yes, you are understanding the nature, but as you're reflecting upon the nature of your inner being, you're starting to see the obstacles to that realization, which Sri Ramana Maharshi said are the habits of the mind. So it's not, this atma-vichara is not simply sitting and reflecting on your divine nature. What it is, and actually the disciples, the main disciples that were with him, they said, it's not really a question, who am I, that you're going to receive an answer, I am divine, I am the self. Of course, that is the you might say, the Advaitic truth. But what happens is, it's a reflection on that nature. And when you start to get quiet inside, you can see the obstacles to this full elimination kind of surrounding you as terms of habits of the mind. So the illumination is, first you become illumined into about what your mind is, both good and bad. And this is what you have to make tranquil. This is what you have to become quiet. When Ramana Maharshi said, you have to get a quiet mind. Someone said, what is moksha? He quoted, what is it? I believe it's Psalm 46. He said, be still and know that I am God. So he quoted the Bible. To know you are God, first you have to be still. It's that. So the aspect of this and what we're talking about, which is trying to get over like intense reactions and situations in life where you're being torn up and the stress is like exhausting. And not only exhausting, but this form of stress, this oppression, when you start to move into environments that you don't like and you close yourself up, it drains enormous amount of psychic energy out of you. So it's draining this energy that you've built up through your sadhana, meditation, prayers, your ritual, all of the things which are from good association. This is what they say. Narada Bhakti Sutra, when he said, I believe it's in verse 42, he said, seek saksanga, seek good association. And then, two verses later, he says, abandon, dusang, just abandon it. He didn't say avoid it. We've spoken about this before. He uses the word in Sanskrit, which means avoid. No, it means abandon, not avoid. And that means it's part of your makeup. You have to renounce it. You have to abandon it. You have to get off. He's talking about this evil association in the mind. It's not like I went to a bad place. I went to someone's house and they were bad people. And so that was an evil association. It's you carry this kind of mental state with you. And so it can either be good association or bad association. So Ramana Maharshi says, first, become still. So if you look at the direction and teaching that he gave his disciples, he gave many. First of all, let's look at the external thing. He said, become vegetarian. It was very important. Why? Because certain types of food, especially meat and those heavy foods and animal products, they agitate the mind. They increase the prana. They vibrate everything at such a high rate. They're very difficult to digest, and especially if people have some form of indigestion or illness, it only is partially digested, and then the remainder becomes poisonous, and then the body reacts and to the poison, and then the vibration and the pranic disturbance even gets more intense, and then it drains energy. So we said, become vegetarian. Live in a quiet, reclusive way. Okay? Do things like go around Arunachala, which itself quiets the mind. He said it will literally calm the mind. He's giving instruction about calming the mind as a preliminary to this intense reflection, which is the higher teaching. Okay, so he uses the word Atmavichara and Jnana Vichara. The Buddha gave the same almost exact instruction, you know, what 1500 years earlier. When, if you read the Pali Canon, where the Buddha is literally giving instructions, and he'd tell the monks, or he'd tell those who were devotees, some of them were family members, householders, he would tell them to go meditate. The word he would use, he'd say, go do jhana. They pronounce it differently in Pali. They say jhana, which is J-H-A-N-A. As opposed to, go do vipassana. So instead of vichara, there he's doing, you know, a tranquility. He's giving advice about external forms of life. He's telling his disciples, Ramana Maharshi's disciples, to meditate. He's giving mantra to some. He's telling them to go around Arunachala. He's telling them to do all these things to get a state of tranquility. Okay? In the Pali Canon, the Pali language, the difference that the Buddha uses, the difference between the word jhana meditation and vipassana. Vipassana means insight. So that's the insight meditation. The jhana meditation is tranquility. So the Buddha is teaching tranquility first, insight afterwards. We can go into the Jewish teaching, or go into the early teachings of Christ in the early church. It's the same thing. Preliminary practices which create tranquility, and then with a quiet mind, you're able to turn it inward, and then you start to do the illumination. This is why Ramana Maharshi said the inward going mind is just called the heart going mind. So we're trying to quiet and make tranquil our emotions. Okay? So the situation that we've just discussed, where there is a lot of emotional disturbance, the first thing we have to realize, it's not the external environment that's creating it. It's our internal makeup. We had the disturbance in us because of our habit to react to it. So really, the first thing along the way to try to become healed from this is to realize in other more subtle aspects of life, in which, you know, you've mentioned, you see this same thing happening. And so that's the first thing to do, because then it comes, in a sense, the confession or the realization that it's an internal makeup. And so in other words, to get at it, to cure it, you don't, this is again the Upanishads and why the Sanatana Dharma and the Hindu teaching is probably the most profound and the most provocative in terms of dynamic getting your hands around the problem and dealing with it. The way they do it, say, you don't deal with the negative aspect of it. And let's say, if I go to a certain place and I have such a terrible emotional reaction, I'm going to avoid going there. They say no. They say go there. They don't deal with the negative aspects of the mind. You just say, my reaction, my habits, my negativity that arises, I'm not going to even touch it. It's very much like the tar baby. As soon as you touch it, you get stuck to it. And then that, because it's an egotistic thing, and the ego's, in a sense, like Bhagavad Gita said, an enemy, you empower it. So what you do is you look at the positive aspects, how you dismantle this intense struggling, intense, you know, stress and disturbance in the mind. So you want to figure out a way to deal with the intense aspect of that, the stress, the energy draining. So we're not going to say, this is the opposite. This is a spiritual way to deal with it as opposed to the psychological way. If we're dealing with a psychological session, well, of course, the therapist is going to say, well, let's just talk about this problem. Let's, you know, let's get into the problem. Let's bring it all out. Let's make the problem all living and, you know, then start to tear it apart and, you know, really see, you know, how this and that. And we can, live with it. No. So what we want to do is we want to just deal with the positive aspects. So, yes, we say we have to be careful about what we eat. We have to be careful how we meditate. We have to be careful how we think about certain people, because, and then you have to work on it. In other words, you prepare yourself. Let's say there's a situation where you're going to have to, you know, you have to go to someone's house and there's going to be some form of worship and you don't like it. But because of obligation and courtesy and friendship, you do it. This is the battleground which for lifetimes we've avoided. So now it's the perfect opportunity to dismantle it. But the idea is if you keep your mind on God and you engage, see, it's not good enough to just, again, pull yourself into a shell and just sit there in your mind and go, om, 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 om. Or you're saying, oh, Lord, save me from, you know, these people. You're just, you know, just entrenching yourself into it. So the thing that you have done in the past, which has been helpful, you think, is to lock yourself up in a shell. Nobody knows it because you're still smiling, but you're hating it. You need to, you know, break out of the shell and actually, possibly, and if you're dealing with people who are friends and they're not, and it's not, you know, you don't want to, you know, bring your own problems into someone else's living room. But if let's say, for instance, the person's house, and they say, what's wrong with you? You know, they notice something. Talk about it. Say, you know, I just don't feel right. And help me. And, you know, no, okay, but what you do is, let's say, you go there early. Let's say the negative mind has incredible power, but it is really, really worried about its ability to keep control. So it keeps everything inside the mind. And so it's all mental and it's all stress. The moment we start taking some foible in our mental makeup and just talk to someone about it. Or if you're not available to talk to someone, let's say you're living a hermetic life, you talk to God about it. And so this is another form of prayer. You say, listen, you must know that I'm thinking this stuff. You must know how lazy I am. And okay, some forms of prayer, you're not even asking God to improve it. You're just talking. In fact, one great saint, who was it? I don't remember. It was a beautiful thing that someone said, I keep praying and I hear so many people pray, but God really hardly ever answers our prayer. In fact, okay, it was Paramahansa Yogananda. He was talking and it was a recording. He said, you know why God doesn't answer your prayers? Doesn't come when you call him? God doesn't come when you call him because he knows, really, all you want to do is complain. You know, but there is a sweetness in that, because if you think about the prayers that, you know, many, if you look at the Christian, the Hindu, The Buddhists, of course, they don't pray. They have this thing. And even the Jewish, of course, the Sufi and the whole Islamic world, they're expressing their weaknesses. And then they're saying, help me, save me, all these things. So this is what we do. And so most people, they'll say, when they come to me, or I'll hear or I'll read people that come to others and say, this is my problem, that is my problem. Almost always, especially if you're talking about Himalayan saints and swamis or different, what you might call teachers of Hinduism, they'll say, increase your prayer life. Look at Start Silawan, that great Athenite monk. His advice first and almost exclusively was, increase your prayer life. Swami Satchidananda, who had just left his body, the famous Satchidananda of Ananda Ashram, he once said, back in around 1947, when he was with Swami Ramdas at the beginning, very early years, and he wanted to go travel up in the Himalayas, and he was asking permission from Papa Swami Ramdas. And he said, well, you know, when I go, and I go and I'm going for the purpose of doing intense meditation and sadhana, but I want your permission, I want to write to you. This was 1947, there wasn't pick up a cell phone, that didn't exist. Even today in places in India, cell phones don't exist. So he said, I'm going to write to you. And I said, okay, and I'm going to talk to you about my problems. Swami Ramdas says, you can write if you want. Understand this. If you're having some problems in your life, in your mental kind of like perception and just the whole internal makeup, know that you're not praying enough. And he said, since his main aspect of prayer was japa of Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, he said, know that you're not doing your meditation and your mantra enough. Know that you're not praying enough. To employ prayer and japa to melt and alleviate a mental problem, you must have perception of what the problem is. The first thing is, you have to understand, especially we're dealing with saying we feel trapped in a certain situation. Okay. First of all, understand, it's not the external environment that's trapping us. We're being trapped by our reaction. An external environment is triggering off something that's laying there inside of us. First thing we all should understand is, this is not a negative experience. It's definitely a positive experience. Because the purpose of spiritual life is evolution, to literally dismantle and burn up karma. And we're talking about mostly the karma that is not the Prarabdha karma, but what might be called the Sanchit karma, the karma that is laying in our path ahead of us that is not manifested yet. In other words, we want to like be so successful at this that we will be free from birth and death. This is moksha. And it's a mental state. So Bhagavan, the Buddha, all these great ones, Jesus said, be still. So what we have to understand is, okay, first of all, it is not an external situation or external environment that's stimulating and that's this feeling of being trapped. So try to, in a less, what we might say, invasive environment, try to experience this trapped, this negative state. This is one of the aspects that happen in proper meditation, proper reflection or inquiry. Because as you're moving down deeper into meditation and you're being quiet in your mind, then you're noticing, if you're keeping up that awareness. This is why we've always from week to week to week talk about the necessity of concentration and awareness. And concentration being the highest virtue, increasing your concentration. So when we're not in meditation, this is the time that we can be very successful in eliminating these problems. Because, okay, if we are in meditation and we've been at it for a number of years, we can quiet a mind and we have, and then meditation becomes like a picnic ground. You know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours, I sit and, you know, I'm really relaxed and everything's fine. We have to be, in a sense, praying, vigilant, and watching even the slightest bobble in the mind, and then go into it and look at it. And in a sense, like in a sense, a ray gun, you know, pulverize it with the name of God. If we find that in our meditation, or let's say in an outside of meditation, when we're just kind of blissing out, we're like putting everything in out of focus, so we're not perceiving it, then we're never going to get over it. So the people I say, what kind of meditation you have? And they say, well, I have meditation. I just sit and everything's just blissful. It's just pure bliss. And I say, oh my God, their meditation isn't worth anything. Because, like, you know, even Ananda Moy Ma, we've spoken about, she said, the tapasahana, the bearing the heat of the distractions in meditation and keeping your mind on the remembrance of the mantra while the distractions are so invasive, experiencing that and turning the name of God onto that, that melts it. And so when we start having difficult or distracting meditations, those are the best times. Now, what's happening, no doubt, to many, and you're experiencing this, you're talking about this, your meditations are pretty blissful, usually, of course. Well, when you said that you went to Shraman Ashram, you had great meditations, and right. Well, as opposed to, like, I can tell you, going into like those holy places, if you're having trouble, for instance, if you're working on the aspects of your mind that to really, we're talking about purification of the mind. We're talking about a process of purification, and then you're actually praying for that, and this is your intention, and you move into the environment or like the real intense vibration, like Sri Raman Ashram or Jerusalem, or Mount Athos, or in the Tria Desert where all the saints are, or any temple or shrine where there's an intense spiritual vibration, and especially where it's traditional and authentic, where saints have been there, then that, if you go with the idea of wanting purification and wanting real evolution, and to be free of mental enigmas, then those saints, those great gods or whatever who's kind of controlling that environment, that holy place, they're going to start to stir that up, and that process of purification will occur. As opposed to you say, you know, I'm just going as, you know, this is my time to really, you know, just, you know, be still and be quiet. And I just want to just bliss out. Well, if you want that, that's what you'll get. Okay. So, first of all, the idea of, okay, being trapped. You understand, this is an opportunity. This is not a negative experience. It's a positive experience. Okay. Start to make the name of God in your prayer very active. Say, please talk to God. Talk inwardly to your own, like, inner self. Say, reveal to me the true nature. Let's say we're increasing the adverse advice I gave you is increase your prayer life. That doesn't mean say, oh God, save me, oh God, you know, free me so not being trapped. You're saying, you're talking to God, you're talking to the inner self, you're talking to the angels, the gurus, you're talking to all those positive influences, and you're saying, reveal to me the true nature of this. And then as you're keeping up with the name of God, you're keeping up with some remembrance of God, whether it be Atmavichara and reflecting, and you're like trying to like stay in this positive state, then what will happen is their prayer will be answered. and the difficulty will like come before you, will come into your mind. You'll realize, like for instance, if we go to a religious environment, let's say a religious ritual, and we feel trapped by it. I've had this exact same experience, and I started to say, oh Lord, oh God, oh inner divine self, reveal to me what is really going on here. And then it's almost like a revelation, even it might be even something like a hunch. You realize inwardly, I'm not religious at all. I have no interest in religion. That's why I feel trapped in a religious environment. So we have to realize, now I'm starting to see is, what I have to do is start to increase my devotion. I have to increase my devotional practices. I have to really like, okay, you're in an environment where people are talking about love of God, but it just doesn't happen to be the form of the path that you follow, and you feel trapped by it. Very, very likely, you just really need to start to, in your own path, in your own practice, actively figure out ways to develop love of God. This is why it was said by many, there's a spiritual significance to everything that happens to us. So in other words, we don't get pushed into negative experiences by our own bad karma. Bad karma is what causes us to react negatively to from life, from one experience to the next in life. It's all an opportunity to become more spiritually inclined, to increase our spiritual makeup. So, yes, why are we trapped in a religious experience? Of course, the ego is immediately going to push up the idea, very attractive idea. Well, I happen to be a Hindu, and now I'm at a Jewish Seder. And so I feel trapped because this intense vibration of this Judaism just traps me. When really, if you put yourself into the mind, in the heart of those Lubavitch Jews, their heart is like yearning for God. They're actively like, devotion is intense. It's freeing them. It's trapping you. You push through the exterior trappings. And you say, listen, you might also be jealousy. You never can tell. The ego is full of so many different kind of diseases. I mean, could have you feel trapped because maybe you're in a room with some people who are really religious and really devotional and really far advanced in spiritual life.